The halacha we learned a few weeks ago was that the practice is, the custom is that women do not do malacha during the time that the Ner Chanukah is supposed to be lit, for a half hour after the stars come out. And that's the way we paskin. And the reason for that is that, as the Mishnah Berurah explains, and this is based on earlier sources, that women played a role in the Nes of Chanukah. And that's related to the other custom, which I mentioned as well, that people eat milchiks on Hanukkah, because the a nes related to Hanukkah and women involved milchiks, and we'll see what that was in just a second. And so there is this tradition that women performed a special role, had a special role in Hanukkah, and according to some, that role had something to do with milchiks. So I mentioned the source briefly. The Mishnah Berurah quotes a source, and I thought it would be interesting for my Bar Torah tonight to go back to the primary sources, not the halacha as we have it, which is much later, but the primary sources, and examine with you who this heroine of Hanukkah was. Kind of still mysterious, because there's no great clarity about it. But what I've done is I've prepared for you three different sources to describe the heroine of Hanukkah. These sources came to me through a sefer called Nativ Bina, written by Rav Yaakovson, which is a sixth volume. I'm staring at it in my study right now. It's a five-volume work on tefillah, and quite a impressive research effort, gathered together many sources. And then in the volume on Hanukkah, he cites these sources. So what you see here in front of you in the source sheet is a copy of his text, a part of the text where he himself did the research and brought down various sources. So we're going to look at three different sources which tell three somewhat different stories about the great heroine of Hanukkah, whose life and practice not only saved Jews or had played a very important role in Hanukkah or around Hanukkah time, but continues to play a role in our contemporary halachic practices today. So the first one in the Who Was the Heroine of Hanukkah collection derives from the Orchos Chaim. It's a medieval source. Aaron HaKohen Miluniel, as you can tell by the Miluniel, he is can everybody get muted? I'd like the music.
Hold on, I'm trying to catch up on that.
Okay. He lived in the 14th century in Provence, and this was his tradition. It's quite short, but it's a tradition that he cites, and he didn't make it up. He says, Kamoshim Mefurish Ba'agada. I'm not sure exactly what that agadic source was, but this is the tradition he had. So we'll read his tradition. We'll see. It's a little, they're all a little different. And what I'd like to try to do with you is, based upon these sources, develop, you might say, a typology of the heroines of Hanukkah. That is to say, what were these heroines like? What can we infer from the stories that we're about to look at during this year about the character, personality, and styles and approaches of the heroine of Hanukkah? So let's look at the first one. It's really the shortest. Yehudis, and just read, I'll read it along, make believe we're learning Gemara like we learned together on Monday nights. Yehudis is the name of the heroine. And according to this Masorah, she was the daughter of Yochanan Kohen Gadol, so she had great priestly yichus. She was the daughter of a Kohen Gadol, which is a person of very great stature in the community. And she was beautiful. The Amar Hamelech Yavan Shetisha'er Imo. And the king of Yavan, that is to say, the person who ruled Eretz Yisrael at that time, wanted her to stay with him. In other words, he wanted to marry her or sleep with her, not totally clear, but she wanted her to stay with him. So she was a, seems to be a young woman. She wasn't obviously married. She had never been married. We'll see, there's a different tradition next, but she had never been married. Young woman, beautiful. And the king of Yavan was struck by her beauty, by her nobility, being the daughter of the Kohen Gadol. And he, in effect, proposed to her would really be too soft a term because he's the boss, he's the king. And he wanted her to stay with him, which is an interesting verb, to stay with him. Okay, so what is this young, noble, aristocratic, boss, Kohen Gadol, no doubt a man of great Kedusha, which she was raised in. So she was raised in the house of great Kedusha. After all, the Kohen Gadol goes into the Beis HaMikdash on the Kodesh Kedushim on Yom HaKippurim, a person in the tradition of great Kedusha. And no doubt the house was a house of Kedusha. So what does this young lady do? Ve'echiloso tavshil shel gvina. She feeds him a dish made out of cheese. Kedei sheyitzame, so that he becomes thirsty. V'yishteh lorov, and he drinks a lot. V'yishtaker min hayayin, and he would get drunk from the wine. V'yishan v'yashen v'yiradeh. And he would fall asleep and fall into a very deep slumber. So, in case you didn't know, dairy dishes make you sleepy. Did you know that? Maybe it does for some people. I guess it does. Otherwise, she wouldn't have had the idea. But in point of fact, that's what she did. And in point of fact, vayihi lo kein, and that's exactly what happened. She fed him the cheese dish. It might have been a nice quiche, or pizza, or whatever, but she fed it to him, and he fell asleep. And what does she do? This beautiful, young, noble, aristocratic woman raised in the Kedusha of the Kohen Gadol, the Chot Charosho, she chops off his head, the heavy Asoli Rushalayim. And she brings the head, now detached from the body, to Yerushalayim. Ukiros sud sare hatsava ki meski boram bayanusu. When the officers of the army saw that their general, their king, their leader had died, they all escaped. So, in some ways, she reminds me of Queen Esther, Esther Hamalka, who was beautiful. King was attracted to her, and she self-consciously, I'll use a strong term, but I think it's appropriate, exploited her beauty, Esther Hamalka, to save the Jewish people, because the king was so infatuated with her that she eventually went along with Mordechai's urging, and she persuaded the king that Haman was a Russia and he had to be killed. So she used her beauty, exploited it in order to save Klal Yisrael. And looks like this woman, Yehudis, did the same thing. She was quite self-conscious. Haisa Yafas Toar, she was beautiful, for which reason the king fell for her, it seems. Immediately after it says she was beautiful, it says the king fell for her. And she used her youth, her beauty, to save Klal Yisrael, and it actually, in some ways, the story also reminds me not only of Esther Amalka, but also of Yael. Remember in Sefer Shoftim, fourth Perek, Yael kills Sisera, who was at war with the Jews. They were successful. His chariots got trapped in the mud. He escaped to the house of Yael, and who's not really a member of Klal Yisrael, and she gives him some milk to drink. He falls asleep, and she chops off his head, and the same idea. Now, the key difference, of course, is that there was nothing in the story about Yoel's beauty, and Yehudas' beauty here plays a pivotal role in the salvation of Klal Yisrael, on the one hand. On the other hand, it is not usually thought to be stereotypically female in those days to chop off a king's head. And so in this model of the heroine of Hanukkah, I would call her the alluring heroine. She, like Esther Hamalka, exploits and uses her beauty to save Klal Yisrael, which is a wonderful act. It's an act of incredible courage. She was a woman of extraordinary courage, young. And nevertheless, she had the self-possession and the courage to trick the king, using her feminine beauty to attract him, and then trick him into eating dairy dishes, and then chopping off his head. So what you have here, to my mind, is a fascinating model of how Yehudas used her feminine qualities, her feminine attractiveness, but nevertheless had what is usually stereotypically thought of as being a kind of a male approach, chop off the guy's head. And so it was a fascinating combination of using her femininity to very aggressively and effectively save Klal Yisrael. So this is one model of the heroine of Hanukkah, very conscious of her beauty, but sharp, shrewd, capable of taking fate in her own hands, not only metaphorically, but literally in her hands, taking the sword and chopping off his head. So fascinating model, to my mind, really a fascinating model of the heroine of Hanukkah. That's the first model. The second one, and if anybody has any questions about that, comments, by all means, I don't see your faces now because of the shared screen, so I can't see anybody raise their hands. But if you want to post anything on chat, by all means, do so. In any case, moving on to the second source, this is a Medrash Ma'aseh Hanukkah, which is cited in the Otzer Midrashim, which I'm also looking at it's a collection of late Midrashim, I'm looking at it in my study, by Rav Eisenstein, I think is his name. He collected lots of Midrashim that weren't in the canonical collections of Midrashim, like Medrash Rabbah, Medrash Tanhuma. These are stray Midrashim that were collected, and I have this blue volume right in front of me, and it's called Medrash Ma'aseh Hanukkah. So different, this is an earlier source than the Orchas Chaim, but later than, say, the Medrash Rabbah, which is, you know, roughly usually thought to be of Amoraic origin. So here's the story, and it's a different story. Same woman, same name. So it's interesting that the name remains constant, but a very, very different story. And here's how it unfolds. And I'd like you to think about what qualities, character, personality emerges in the second story of the heroine of Hanukkah, as it might differ from the first one. And I would suggest that there is really, in thinking about this typologically, it's a different type of woman, different type of heroism, a different type of person that emerges, and another kind of, in some ways, a role model for all of us, courage to save Klal Yisrael. Okay, V'haysa Sham, this is source number two, Isha Almana, thank you, Rebecca, for pointing to it, and there was a widowed woman, Yehudas Shma, her name was Yehudas, so the name remains constant, but quite different from the first story, this woman is a widow, an Almana, which means that she was not probably as young as Bas Yochanan Kohen Gadol, was not yet married, might have been just a teenager. They married young in those days. She was a more experienced woman, and a woman who had experienced, obviously, travails in her life because her husband had died. We don't know how or why, but she had obviously borne tragedy and cope with that. A woman with experience, difficult life experience. So what does this Yehudas do? Widow? Lacha shifchasa, She took her maid servant in those days. It was very common for people of reasonable means to have a maid servant, to be wealthy. And she went to the gates of Yerushalayim, the Umra, and she said to the gatekeepers, the soldiers on guard, Hanichu osi latzeis, allow me to leave. Remember, there was a siege, so there was the enemy outside the gates of Yerushalayim, so the gates were closed, and nobody was allowed in entrance or exit to protect the residents, the inhabitants of the city. So she says, let me go out. Shema yase hamakom nes al yadei. Maybe al yadei. Maybe Hashem will perform a miracle through me to save the residents of Yerushalayim and Klal Yisrael. Interesting request that she makes. Remember that she initiates this herself. In the first story, who initiated the challenge? It was the Melech Yavon who insisted that this beautiful young woman remain with him. So he initiated her dilemma, and she responded with cleverness and with enormous courage. Here, this woman was quite different in age and life experience. She initiates it. She has an idea. We'll see how the idea unfolds. And she persuades the guards to let her out, which is really quite, I mean, who would want to leave the safe gates of Yerushalayim, where her family and her friends are, where the soldiers are, to go out by herself with her shifcha, her maidservant, into enemy territory? It's a shockingly audacious and creative and ambitious undertaking. It's just shocking in its audacity. So they agree, Piskula Vyatza, they open the gates and she leaves. V'halcha lefnei hamelech, and she goes before the king. Now, that in itself is pretty amazing. Like, the king was probably not, you know, hanging out by himself wherever the camp was. She probably had passed through soldier after soldier after soldier after guard after guard after guard, somehow or other, and it remains mysterious as to how, but somehow or other she managed to get past all of the guards and gatekeepers to the king. So, again, you know, this is the story. We don't necessarily have all the details, but this is what the story tells us. She gets an audience with the king. Now, maybe the king really did want to speak to her once he found out that this was a Jewish woman, because maybe he figured she would, you know, become a traitor, tell the secrets of the fortifications or the army that was protecting the Jews. So he probably had an interest in seeing her, but that she got to him and got past all the guards is really testament to her strength, her will, her drive, her charms, her complete effectiveness. So he says to her, Ma tivakshi, what do you seek? Amra, she says, Adoni, my master, Bas Gedolim mi Yisrael Anochi. I am the daughter of great Jews. Ba'achai Nevi'im, and my brothers are prophets. Vishamati Shahayu Misnabim, and I heard that they were prophesying, Shemachar Tipol Yerushalayim Biyadcha. On the morrow, Yerushalayim will fall in your hands. Now, it was almost certainly false that if her brothers were prophets, they were prophesying the fall of Yerushalayim the next day. What she told him was obviously conjured up, was obviously a lie, in order to entrap him, in order to capture his interest. Which, of course, is justifiable under the terrifying circumstances of the siege. Lahaya melech maimin laosa Yehudis, and the king believed her, v'yehav osa, and he loved her. Now that's, if you think about it, really remarkable. First of all, why did he believe her? It must be because her presence, the way she presented herself, her carriage, her nobility, the character, the personality, the charisma that she exuded were all such as to persuade this king. Now, of course, it's a message that he wanted to hear, so it may not have been terribly hard to persuade him, but nevertheless, there must have been something about her which had such authority and such, I would say, charisma, perhaps, that he was just had a believer. And not just believer, but the other part of it is, v'yehav osa, he loved her. Now, it doesn't say here, as in the first, does it say anything here about her physical appearance? In the first story, the first line says, v'haysa yafas tohar. The physical appearance of this young woman was pivotal in the king's falling for her. Here, it doesn't say anything about her beauty whatsoever. Maybe she wasn't beautiful, although I imagine she must have been reasonably attractive, but it's something, there was something about her carriage, her personality, the way she presented herself, the way she communicated, the way she spoke. She must have exuded a certain power of enchantment over the king. She was a true ishiyut, true personality with extraordinary presence, and in fact, as the story unfolds, it's very much true. Vayomer lo, and he said to her, Ritzonech shetinasi li? Would you be willing to marry me? Now, this guy is the general, or the melech, the king, the general person in charge. He could have said, marry me. What did the first story say? First story what says is, Amar HaMelech Yavan Sheti Shayarimo. The king said, you stay with me. You know, I'm the boss. You stay with me. This king, in this story, did not say that to this woman. Ritzonek Sheti Nasi Li? Would you be willing to marry me? Why the difference? I think the difference might well be because of the persona and the gravitas and the charisma of this woman. She must have had such presence that he couldn't just say, marry me. He felt compelled to ask her because she was something special about her. He couldn't just roll right over like a tractor. She was a woman who had to be asked. Again, a sign of her extraordinary presence, the courage, the initiative, the audacity, going before the king, getting through the gates, getting through the guards, and now telling the king the story. The king says, would you please marry me? It's quite a remarkable woman. The Amrullah, she says to him in response, Adoni HaMelech, my master, the king, Eini ru'uya afilo li echad me'avodecha. I am not suitable even for one of your servants. In other words, who am I to marry the king? V'omnam? Still, nevertheless, kevan shelibcha notel azeh, since your heart is inclined in this direction, here's what you need to do. Hevir kruz b'chol ha'machane, proclaim throughout the entire encampment, shekol mi sheyireh shtei nashim holchos etzel ha'ma'ayin, whoever sees two women going to the well, to the fountain, Al yifgu bahem, don't attack them, don't touch them. Why? The fishat shricha, ani leilech l'sham luchotz asmi v'litpo. I need to go take a shower. I need to take a bath. You want to marry me? Well, let me get ready for this. So, quite remarkable. She cleverly makes herself safe in alien territory. She tricks the king into protecting her. The king wants to marry her. Well, then have your cruise b'cholamachana, like proclaim publicly, nobody touched these two women. Therefore, they become safe. Remember, it's two women walking in an army encampment are not exactly the safest. It's not exactly the safest place to be. So she figured out a technique to keep herself safe. And of course, she has to prepare herself to be attractive to the king so that she can carry out the rest of her plan, which emerges as follows. Miyad eviru ha-kruz v'yasa sakach. King issued the proclamation. They were safe, and they went down to wash in the fountain. V'yasa ha-melech mishte gadol. The king makes a great party. Remind you of Ahasuerus a little bit. Marries Vashti. Marries Esther. Makes a big party. V'shasu v'nishkaru. They drank and they got drunk. And each partygoer eventually, droopy-eyed, drunk, wanders off back to their tents. They're in army encampments, so not their homes, but their tents. And the king is resting in her embrace, and he is sleeping. V'holcha osa Yehudis, and this Yehudis went, the nutla sayif shalo, and she took the sword from the king himself. Was that a side, no doubt? V'chad charosho, sliced off his head, this is like the first story, upashta sadin olav, and she wrapped the head of the king inside a sheet so nobody could see it. Now, remember, this is late at night. Everybody is asleep in their tents. So she and her shivcha sneak out of the army encampment. Aholcha emrosho, she takes the head with her, Shalmelech, etzol sharei Yerushalayim, to the gates of Yerushalayim, the Amra, and she says, Pischuli, open up the gates. Pischuli Sha'arim, open up the gates. This is a reverse of what she said leaving. There she said, open up the gates. Now she says, open up the gates in return. Shekvar Asa HaKadosh Baruch Hu Neis Al Yaday. I said, maybe HaKadosh Baruch Hu will make a neis, maybe. Let me out. And now she returns with a neis in her hands. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has already made a neis in my hands. Now, what are these guards thinking? How likely is it that this woman and her shivcha performed a miracle? I mean, through HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Amro lo, they said to her, Lo dayech shezonis v'kilkalt, el shabasa ba'alila imanu. It's not enough that you prostituted yourself and you corrupted yourself. Why do we think you went out to the army encampment? Not because you wanted to daven mariv. We think you went out there because you wanted to earn a few bucks as a zona, as a prostitute. Certainly a demand for that in an army encampment. And not only that you corrupted yourself and you debased yourself in this way, but you're making up a whole story that there's a nace. So here you have male guards totally misreading a woman and accusing her of engaging in lascivious behavior. And that was so far from what she had in mind or what she did, it could not have been further from the truth. But here you have these male guards who totally misread this remarkable, remarkable woman. Miyad hera salahem rosho shalmelech. Immediately, after they accuse her of such behavior, she shows them the severed head of the king. Well, that will convince anybody, I'd have to say. Kevan sherauhu, Once they saw the severed head of the king, Paschu Hasha'arim v'yotsu v'herimu kol. Open the gates. They went out and they lifted their voice, Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. Started yelling and screaming, Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. Kevan Sheshamu Yivanim Kach. And once the Greek soldiers are hearing these Jews screaming out of the top of their lungs, Shema Yisrael, they said, Amru Lamacharas, Lamacharas Bayim Aleinu. Tomorrow they're going to attack. They saw this was a sign that they were going to attack. So they go to the king to report what they've heard. And they find him without a head. Terror fell upon them. They all ran away. And the Jews, the Jewish army chased after them. They killed many. And that was a Jewish victory. Cain, Yasa, Kadosh Baruch Hu, Nekah, Besoneinu, the Medrash concludes, so Kadosh Baruch Hu should take revenge against those who hate us, Mehera, quickly, V'yachash lenu Yeshua, and he should bring to us redemption quickly. Hakasav, it says, Yishayahu, Valet Siyon Goa. So, those of you who are familiar with the books of the Apocrypha, Apocryphal literature, these are ancient Jewish works that were not included in Tanakh. There is a book in the Apocrypha called Judith, which tells a very, very, not identical, but very, very similar story with Holofernes, who was the Greek king. And it's around the same time as the Yevanim, so that's the connection to Hanukkah. It's around that period of persecution of the Jews. And this Medrash parallels, although it's not identical to that story, it's Jewish, and it found its way into our Masorah. Judith is not a part of Tanakh. It's not one of the Sifrei Kodesh. But this story did find its way into our Sfarim HaKadoshim and variants in this Medrash Maaseh Chanukah, which is, again, not the Medrash Rabbah, but Medrash Tanachum. It's not a canonical Medrash, but it's been a part of our Masorah. It's in the Otzer Midrashim, and it has its significance. So, what are we to make of this woman? She's quite different, I think, than the Yehudis of the first version, or Chos Chaim. She's experienced with life's difficulties. She thinks strategically. In other words, the first Yehudis didn't have much time to plan a whole complicated scenario. But this Yehudis in the Medrash Maaseh Chanukah is a woman of obvious wisdom, strategic thinking, extreme courage, audacity, charisma, obvious charm, not necessarily the youthful beauty of this first version, but a woman who was such a presence that the king had to ask her, would you please marry me? So if I were to characterize in a word the first heroine as the alluring heroine, and a heroine she truly was, the courage to chop off the king's head, it's really amazing. But she used her beauty, she was alluring, she used her allure to trap the king, just like Yael did to some extent, although not quite the same way. And this Yehudis, the Almana, I would call her the wise, charismatic heroine. Very different personality. Capable of strategic thinking, of what you would expect in many ways of a leader, qualities of a leader, which she demonstrated in her way. Again, these were continuous with her femininity. Certainly in the first story, it was completely continuous with her feminine beauty. She was described immediately as Yifas Tohar. But while her femininity here isn't described as beauty, nevertheless, there was something about her femininity which attracted the king so much so that he had to ask her politely if she'd marry him. So this is continuous with her femininity, but it's a different model, a different way in which she achieved her extraordinary goals successfully. So we have the alluring heroine and the wise and charismatic heroine, I would say. And now, Rebecca, if you'd scroll down to the third and final version of the story, this appears in the same collection of Medrash Maisa Chanukah, same collection of Otzer Midrashim that I mentioned. And here we have a slightly different version of the story. And the name Yehudas does not appear, but we have a feminine female hero again, and let's see how she is depicted. Kevin Sharo Yevanim She'en Yisrael Margishin. Somebody doesn't like femininity. What word would you suggest? Lynn, what word would you propose in lieu of that? Lynn, any suggestions? Feminine?
I don't know. I'm just all right. It's enough with the feminine. It's beautiful femininity.
Masculinity.
Her wiles are this. She's in her head. They don't have a choice here. The king is saying, you know, they want to sleep with a woman.
Remember that.
It's not about femininity or beauty or anything. She's what position did a woman have if the king says you're mine? That's it. So feminine wiles? I mean, come on. It's not the same as Esther. I don't know. I'm getting a little nauseous.
You're entitled to your opinion.
Too much with the femininity already.
You're entitled to your opinion. I respect your opinion. For me, these are all, she uses her gender in very powerful ways. I'm calling that femininity. If you don't like it or you disagree with me, that's you're entitled to your opinion. Be all that as it may. The third story is that it's not Yehudas, doesn't say her name. Here it says, Kevin Sharo Yevanim She'en Yisrael Margishim Begzeiro Sehem. The Jews were not being responsive or feeling the pain of their gezeros, of their decrees. Amdu v'gazru aleihem gezeira mara v'achura. They got up, they stood up, and they decreed a bitter, ugly, Gezerah, decree against them. And this is infamous. It actually appears in the Gemara and a number of different cases, and it appears in a number of the Chanukah sources as well. And this Gezerah was, Shelo tekanes kala balaila harishan mechupasa ela etzela hegemon shebemakom ahu. If a young woman was to get married, then the first night of her first wedding night would have to be spent not with her husband, but with the hegemon, which is a Greek word for the ruler, hegemony, which is obviously a horrific, horrific decree. I mean, when really absolutely horrific and really destructive of marriage, of the poor woman who was subjected, women who were subjected to that decree. So that was a decree. They figure, well, if all of our other decrees don't work, this one will. Kevan Sheshamu Yisrael Kach. Once Yisrael heard this, Rafu Yidehem, their hands became weak. Tashash Kocham. Again, they became weak. Benimnu Milares. They didn't want to get married. Nobody wanted to subject themselves to such horrific violence behavior. The Nahagu B'davar Zeh Shalosh Shanim V'Shmona Chadashim. And for a period of 3 years and 8 months, which is a pretty precise counting of time, for 3 years and 8 months, there were no marriages amongst the Jews. What a horrible thing. No marriages amongst the Jews. Terrible. Terrible. The future of Judaism depends upon, and Jewish life depends upon marriage. It depends upon, you know, family life. It's so hard without it. I mean, it's just a terrible for nobody in the whole of Klal Yisrael to marry. Terrible, terrible decree. Ad shabab ma'aseh shel bas matisyahu kohen gadol shenisis leben chashmonai. Until the story came with the daughter of Matisyahu kohen gadol, of Hanukkah fame, who was to marry the son of a chashmonai, one of the chashmonai, part of the same camp. The Elazar hayashmo, and his name was Elazar. We are not yet told her name so far. Kevan, at least in this snippet, Kevan shehigia yom simchasa, when the day of the chas, now notice, nobody's getting married, but she decides to get married. Her parents decide that she gets married. Although she's quite a person, as you will soon see. So she made that decision, I'm sure, herself as well. Not to mention her husband. Kevan shehigia yom simchasa, once the day of her joy arrived, that was the chas in a day, hoshivuha ba'apiryon. They placed her in, a throne kind of that was used. They would put the kala on the throne, they would carry her as like a portable throne sort of. So they put her on that. Ukishihigiya zman hasu'uda, and when the reception came, this kabsu kol gedola Yisrael achbot matisyahu uben chashmonai. All of the great leading Jews of the time gathered together in honor of Matisyahu, her father, and the young man she was to marry. Shelo hayu bioso hadar gedolim mehem. They were this young man and the future husband of this woman and the daughter of Matisyahu. And Matisyahu himself, those are the greatest of Jews. So out of respect, everybody came. Actually, your name comes up in just a second. Ukashi Yashvu Lisod, and when they all sat down to feast, to celebrate the wedding, Amda Chana Bas Matisyahu, now her name appears. Chana is her name, not Yehudas. But Chana, the daughter of Matisyahu, gets up, Me'al Apirion, from the narrow throne that she was sitting on, which is generally kind of high up
in here.
The Safka Kapeha Zo Al Zo. Somebody please place yourself on mute. The Safka Kapeha Zo Al Zo, and she clapped her hands like that. So she was obviously provoking the attention of all of the great assembled Jews to celebrate her chasna. Now, if you think the clapping of the hands would attract their attention, what she does next is absolutely astonishing. The kara porphyron shela, and she ripped off the royal garment she was wearing. The Amda Lefne Kol Yisrael Kishihi Megula. And she stood before all of the leaders of Klal Yisrael uncovered. Now, I don't think it means that she was totally uncovered. She probably had various garments and layers of garments on, but the outer royal garment that she had, she ripped. And the Medrash calls it standing before everybody uncovered. Again, not literally naked, which I'm sure I can't believe that she would do. That would be just shocking beyond all belief. But not covered in a way that a Bas Yisrael would be covered, certainly at her wedding. Ulefnei avia v'ima v'chosna, before her father and her mother and her chasen. This is like, you just imagine this. I mean, it's just shocking, shocking behavior. Mind-blowing. Kevan sharo achel kach, when her brothers saw this provocative act, shameful act in their judgment, despise you, they became ashamed. Nasnu pnehem bekarka, and they put their faces in the ground. Vikaru bigdehem, and they ripped their clothing in mourning. And they wanted to kill her. for such shameful, depraved behavior? How's that for a wedding night? Amra Lahem. Yeah, and she's just such an amazing, impressive personality. She says to them, Shi'uni achai v'dodai. Listen to me, my brothers and beloved. Ma im bishvil she'amadati lifnei tzadikim aruma. If I, who stood before tzadikim unclothed, b'li shum avera, nobody has done any avera, hare atem miskanim bi, and you are angry and seeking vengeance against me. Well, the ein atem miskanim lemosrani biyat oralis olel bi, and why don't you like get angry at the creep who wants to do this to me, this hegemon? You're angry at me? I'm the victim. You're angry at the wrong person. Go get angry at the person who's responsible, the king. Halo yesh lachem lilmod mi Shimon v'Levi. Should you not learn from Shimon and Levi? Achei Dina, the brothers of Dina. Shelo hoyu el ashtayim. There are only two of them. V'kanu lach, this is the story we just read earlier in the Parsha, in Sefer Bereishis, where we just read this, where Shechem raped Dina, captured her, and the brothers Shimon and Levi stir up the other brothers, and they all go and they trick the residents of the city, Hamar, Shechem, Hamar's man, they trick the residents of the city to get bris milah, and as they are recovering from their bris milah in pain, Shimon and Levi wipe out the entire city. So they avenged the honor of their sister Dina. Shelo hayu el ashnayim. There are only two of them. Bekinu lachosam, and they avenged their sister. Vaharugu krach b'shchem. They killed the whole city. Umasru nafshem al yichud shel makom. And they were moser nefesh. They were willing to sacrifice their lives because of the terrible moral crime that was committed. V'azram Hashem. And Hashem helped them. V'lo hichlima. And he did not embarrass them. V'atem chamesh achem. You are five brothers, not two. Yehuda, Yochanan, Yonasan, Shimon, ve'Elazar. U'pirchei kuhuna Yosef mimasayim bachar. There are more than 200 young Kohanim. Simu b'tchonchem al hamakom. Have trust in Hashem. And he will help you to avenge my honor and to protect me and protect all of the Sulos Yisrael who want to get married, and Klal Yisrael, the future of Klal Yisrael. Osa Shah Niskano Achel V'Amru. At that moment, their brothers became Kanayim, and they said, Bo V'Nito Eitza Ma Nase. Let us come and figure out a strategy as to what to do. V'Nichnasu Allah V'Hamelach. And they, as a group, attacked the king who had instituted this vile decree. V'hargehu, v'nargehu, v'netze, let us do that, let us kill him and let us leave. Naschil achar kach ba'avadav u'besarav, after that, we will attack the rest of the his servants and his other officers. V'asa lehem HaKadosh Baruch Hu tshuva gedola, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu made a great miracle, Shua, Gedola, and he saved them, and this decree ended. So this is a breathtaking story. They're all breathtaking in their own ways, but something about this, to my mind, is just really especially breathtaking. If I were to name her, I would call her a revolutionary heroine. She had the power, the strength, to engage in the kind of shocking behavior which would get everybody's attention and then use that to shame everybody, to shame the potential soldiers who could protect Yisrael. So look at the crucial difference between the first two stories and this story. The first two stories, it is Yehudis, the heroine, who herself slays the king. Whereas this revolutionary heroine, I would call her, instigates a revolution. She provokes by shaming men in the community, the soldiers in the community, potential soldiers in the community. She provokes them by shaming them into, by forcing them to recognize that they have a responsibility to protect all the young women who are seeking to go get married. And of course, they're Hassanim as well, who obviously suffer from this. And she preaches to them in an incredible way the importance of bitachon in Hashem, of faith in Hashem. So she is not a revolutionary only, but she's a revolutionary with incredible fervor, incredible spirituality, emunah and bitachon. And she had enough bitachon in emunah to engage in behavior that was shameful for her. But she used her shameful behavior very self-consciously. This was not an accident. This was by design. This was a strategy to shame and therefore provoke the men in this community to take responsibility and have bitachon in Hashem. So I would call her not just a revolutionary heroine, but a revolutionary, profoundly religious heroine. They're all these women were religious and heroines too, of course, not to minimize anybody else. But she speaks about bitachon, about emun in Hashem, and she appeals to Shimon and Levi as role models, and she incites a rebellion. She incites others. In some ways, she reminds me of Devorah. Devorah, the great Shofetes, the great Navi, I should say, who got Barak and his soldiers to attack. And Yael plays a role in that. So just as Devorah gets Barak and his soldiers to do what they have to do, this Hannah doesn't have the authority of a Devorah, but she is the daughter of Matisyahu, and the Kedusha of Matisyahu, and the Emunah of Matisyahu, and the Bitachon of Matisyahu, and all of the Chashmonaim, as was developed over time. She latched, not just she doesn't, she takes that, and with incredible courage, shaming herself, but she uses that. That Kedusha, to provoke the kind of behavior that is what made Hanukkah happen. So she really is the secret heroine of Hanukkah, the instigator of the whole revolution that made the Nes of Hanukkah possible. So we have three different stories of heroines who played a role in the Nes of Hanukkah. The wise and charismatic heroine, the alluring heroine, I'm calling them, and the revolutionary religious heroine. These are maybe not names that are fair, but they're all quite different. You see, when you examine these makoros carefully, you see that you don't just say, oh, a woman was involved in Nes Hanukkah, but what does that mean? And what was the woman like? And if you read all these makoros carefully, you see that we have three different images of the way in which a woman, Yehudis or Hannah, depends upon the story, could play a pivotal role in the salvation of Klal Yisrael and in Nes Hanukkah. I have to say that we all have much to learn from them. The courage, the self-possession, the strength to risk their lives, certainly in the second story, going to the enemy camp, like, whoa, who would do that? Or this young woman in the first story, cutting off the king's head. Like, maybe she's 14 or something, or 15. It's like an amazing thing. And in the final story of this, I just imagine her standing on top of that Hyperion. We have something to learn from all of these heroines, and they should be a part of our thinking about Hanukkah as we light the menorah of Hanukkah, the Nes Hanukkah. It's obviously HaKadosh Baruch Hu performs the Nisim. None of us can make miracles. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu performs nisim through the ishtadlus of great Jews and great people. Moshe Rabbeinu with Kriyas Yamsuf throughout Jewish history. And here we have three heroines, three women, who in their own quiet ways transform Klal Yisrael. These sources, the first one, as I mentioned to you, is from the Or Chos Chaim, the author of the Kolbo, usually identified with the author of the Kolbo. The second two are from Midrash Maaseh Hanukkah, which appears in the Otzer Midrashim, a collection of late Midrashim. And you can find all of them in a sefer called Netiv Bina, Netiv Bina by Rav Yaakovson, a five-volume work.